It's time to go behind the scenes with the boys in gold. This is NFC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Hosted by Tony Husband and Jamie Watson on your home for Nashville Soccer Club.
ESPN
94.9 and the Game Nashville app.
And it is a very good evening to you from Tony Husband. Just Tony this week. And a very happy Labor Day holiday to you all across Middle Tennessee. And what a weekend we've had. Our menu tonight on NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Dan Lovitz from the Boys in Gold. We will talk to him about Friday night's thriller against NYCFC. Another undefeated game at Nissan Stadium for Nashville SC. And he's a former Toronto and Montreal player. And so who better to talk about two upcoming road games than Dan Lovitz and the trip across the border. We also, of course, have had 43,000 fans at Nissan Stadium last night. US men's national team in action. Dan was among the crowd for that one. We will get his views on what he saw and what it all means after two winless games at the start of this World Cup qualifying campaign for Greg Berhalter's side. We'll also get a Canadian perspective on all this. Luke Warman called the game for TSN last night across the border, and he is right across all the MLS news with Montreal and Toronto, and so he will help us preview the weekend game at Montreal and then look a little bit further ahead to Toronto. All of this in the company as well of Max Herz, who's on the other side of the glass with us this evening. Max, I know you were at Nissan Stadium last night to see the US men's national team, your first World Cup qualifier in person. Enjoy it.
It was special. It was a whole lot of fun. Really hoping for a second U.S. goal, which didn't come, but an amazing experience and great to see a crowd that really felt like it was a lot of Nashvillians, too. There were out-of-towners, but there were a lot of Nashville SC fans out there.
It was a great buzz as well in the city during the day as well. All that, of course, came after, though, Friday night. Friday night lights, it always is in this part of the world, isn't it? And Friday night certainly was lit up by one man in particular who today was named MLS Player of the Week in Week 23 of Major League Soccer. It was a night where we saw more Mukhtar magic.
Nashville goes over the top to Mukhtar inside the penalty area. Mukhtar, he scores! It's a breakthrough! Of course it's Hani Mukhtar! The league can't stop that man! And Nashville leads 1-0. In the 30th minute.
Boom. 1-0 up after a difficult first half hour against an NYCFC side who arrived in a very confident frame of mind and played some good football in that first half hour. But it just goes to show the resilience and the strength that Nashville SC have at home. It was a superb pass from Dax McCarty to pick out Hani Mukhtar, and then you kind of had no doubt he was going to finish. And then momentum really kept swinging. Only 120 seconds separated the first two goals. And, well, Daniel Rios was on target, or certainly in the right place to set up the second, within 120 seconds of that first one we just heard.
Nashville's buzzing. It's Hani Mukhtar, 30 yards from goal. Lays it right side. Rios scores! 2-0!
Wonderful ball from Daniel Rios, eventually ruled as an own goal. Vuk Lutelovic on his debut for NYCFC with a deflection into the net past Sean Johnson. 2-0. Then there would be the drama, of course, of two red cards before half time. So the second half, both sides playing with 10 men, as Maxi Morales and Dax McCarty saw red towards the end of that first period. But Nashville would wrap things up and comfortably set themselves up for another home win, their eighth of the campaign, and they would do so through a combination of Sapong and, guess who? It's Hani.
Castellanos has the ball taken off of his foot, and here comes Hani Mukhtar, and CJ Sapong barreling down in the final third, pushes forward to Mukhtar, he scores! This is the battle cry of a contender. Nashville leads by an astounding 3-goal margin. And can anyone in America stop Hany Mukhtar? My goodness, this club is a problem.
John Freeman on the call with Wes Bowling here on ESPN 94.9. And, well, setting out those questions, let's just think about some of those questions right now. Is America watching this team in Music City? I think they most definitely are now. Is there a little bit of a perception change? A lot was made in the early weeks. Well, Nashville are going to score goals and win games, but they're playing mainly at home. And yes, they've had that home-heavy schedule, but they are more often than not now winning in that home-heavy schedule. And they are up to 38 points. Only Orlando level with them on 34 points. They're only ahead of them by virtue of one more victory. And then New England, of course, the runaway leaders up there on 52 points in the Eastern Conference. So, just what about this team? Where are this team? Are they raising the bar somewhat? A few weeks ago, I think we probably looked at this team and thought, you know, let's try and get up around that 45-point kind of mark. Well, I think they can probably revise up from that. They're only 7 points off that now, and they have 12 games to go in Season 2 here in Major League Soccer. They're 15 unbeaten, including playoff game last year, at home. Only New England in all of MLS have actually won more home games this season with their 9 victories up at Gillette Stadium. So 12 games to go. Now, in the last 12 games, 7 of which have been at home, granted, Nashville have taken 23 points. Look at the way they've responded as well since the disappointing last-minute defeat at Miami. Bounced back so strongly with 3 wins and a draw since. The next 4 games are on the road. But these next 4, I think, offer a big opportunity to really try and add to that points total. Montreal this weekend, that is not an easy game. They're 6th in the table. Then it's Toronto, they're bottom. Then it's Miami, they're 10th. Then it's Chicago, they're 11th. Now, how much do you read into standings at this point of the season? Teams are starting to get a bit desperate for points. Miami are a much better team probably right now than 10th suggests. They are still paying the price for a pretty awful first half of the season. Chicago showing signs from time to time of getting a bit better. Toronto building for the future, let's face it. Those next 4, though, big games. Because following that, the next 4, Orlando, who are 2nd, that's at home at Nissan Stadium. NYCFC on the road, they're 4th. DC United on the road, they're 7th. And then home to the MLS Cup champions, Columbus, who are currently 8th. But again, one of those kind of teams, by the time that game comes around, don't necessarily be fooled. They are going to be fighting to make sure they get in the postseason and have a chance to defend their crown. So what about points? What do you need if you're thinking about playoffs? And I had a little look at this earlier on today. So you want to get a home playoff game. You want to finish top 4. 4th place, 2016 in Major League Soccer, 34-game season, 46 points got you there. In 2017, 55 points was needed by Atlanta to make it into 4th. 2018, it was 51, DC United on that occasion. 2019, 50 points got Toronto there. So you could be looking as few as 8 points that Nashville may need to get a top 4 place. Or you could be looking at as many as 17 if you have a statistical anomaly, a little bit like that Atlanta year. What I would say when I've looked at this, and I've been very conservative, Max, on this as I went through the remaining games. When you consider this is a Nashville side, it's only lost 2 games all season, but they are going to play a road-heavy schedule going on now. You don't know, there may be injuries. Bound to be a dip in form here and there. They're going to go to places where teams in the standings, they may be low, but of course, they might be fighting for other things. Coaches fighting for their jobs, players fighting for their jobs into next season. But I reckon that getting over that 50-point mark is very much on for this team now. 52, 53 points. You could put a margin of error on there. But really what we're looking at is this team has got a great shot at a home playoff game. They've got a really, really great shot at it. And as much as this is a new team and there's a lot of people looking at next season, new stadium, things are going to be exciting. Soccer's really going to continue to grow in Music City. Hey, look, savor this team that is playing right now. I mean, and you've seen some of the games and called some of the games recently as well. This is a team in a very good place, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is crazy to think about, like you said, only three home games left in this entire regular season, just part of sharing a venue with an NFL team for the final year. The Titans need it for a lot of weekend games, so that'll get you a lot of home games in the early season. And the road results have been there, and they finally got that road win too. So I think it has been proven now this is a team that can win on the road, and if they want that home playoff game, Tony, which we all have our eyes on, like you just said, there's going to have to be another road win or two, but they've proven they can do it now, and I think the schedule certainly allows another road win or two down the stretch.
Yeah, and, you know, this is, at the moment, a roster that is fully fit. And I'll say that again. It's got a player in Hani Mukhtar who really now is flying. MLS Player of the Week, huge influence. CJ Sapong, flying. Daniel Rios has come in the last 2 weeks. The thing I like about Rios, big fan favorite as well, things seem to happen when he's on the field. You know, and that's a great quality. That's a quality you can't really coach. That's just something that's a presence somebody has. So it augurs well. It augurs well. That was Friday, and we'll break down more of the mood in the camp with Dan Lovitz. Let's just reflect a little bit, Max, on Sunday night. I know you were there at Nissan Stadium. I was there as well. It was nice just to be in the crowd and watch a game for a change. What was the message, do you think, sent out to U.S. soccer? Look, give us this World Cup soccer. Let's see Music City really show off in 2026, because that's the big prize, isn't it? And thankfully, it didn't really matter what happened on the field for the soccer fans of Nashville in one sense last night, because part of it was about showing off this city, showing off this area and saying, bring us the World Cup.
Yeah, I hope they weren't judging us based on the result, because I know a lot of the U.S. fans came away wanting more out of that one, especially with it being the first home match of this World Cup qualifying cycle. But I think the message was sent. Nashville can pack a stadium, and whether they look at Nissan Stadium for the World Cup or they look at the new Nashville SC Stadium, I think Nashville has shown not only do they have that steady core of fans that has been at every Nashville SC game since USL, loves the team, follows every move, but there is a group of fans locally and regionally that loves, loves, loves the sport. And the fact that there's a club team at the highest level of North American soccer here has roped even more people into that. And I think there are a lot of people in the crowd who, like me, had never been to a match of that caliber before just because it hadn't existed in a city where they'd lived. So even if the knock on Nashville is it's a newer soccer fan base compared to some of the cities we may be competing with in the U.S. and Canada, I think we make up for that gap in plenty of other ways.
Yeah. As for the action on the field, well, U.S. a disappointing result. Ultimately, 1-1 tie. That's 2 points from two games. Big thing I'd say, there are 13 games left in this octagonal. That's a lot of points. This team's just looked a bit disjointed the first couple of games. And I'm not entirely surprised that they are. If you look at the summer, they played Nations League and Gold Cup. They effectively had two groups. You could even put a third in if you talk about the Olympic qualifying that happened earlier in the year as well. And you're trying to kind of bring this disparate group all together now, the kind of MLS-based group, the European-based group. Only three starters in Nashville last night started the Gold Cup final, and that was all the momentum came from. So you can understand that this is a team that has to gel, but you don't want to be leaving too many points on the board early on, because then you're chasing and then the pressure can build. And the pressure is there for this team, but the pressure's there because this team looks like it could be a good side. This is a side that can really compete. They've got the players now. So 13 games. I'm still going to say, Max, right now, I'd be amazed if this group cannot get in the top three, which is what
I hope
need.
You're right.
You know, I would be amazed if they can't do that. But pressure can do funny things. We'll get Dan Lovitz's view on that as well. And we're going to talk the boys in gold and this wonderful season two. All of that is coming up after the break. You're listening to NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. And welcome back, NSC Backstage. Tony Husband with you. We are presented by Camarena Tequila. It's time to really take you backstage, behind the scenes. Our special guest this week is a man who turned 30 on August 27th. He played for Lower Merion Soccer Club and is a Philadelphia native. 4 years at Elon Uni, a Southern Conference All-Freshman team player, He was drafted by Toronto in the MLS draft, but would see more game time with Montreal. And now, of course, he's one of Nashville's original MLS boys in gold. 165 MLS appearances under his belt. It's a very good evening, Dan Lovitz.
Very happy to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
No, it's great to have you. And as we like to give you guys the build-up. Jack Mayer enjoyed this build-up. Alistair Johnson enjoyed the build-up. We, you know, we give you the full, you know, CV of these players and show what you've done in your great professional careers already. First of all, Dan, I know you were at the stadium last night to see U.S. men's national team. Quick takeaway on that game. And, you know, you would have been frustrated like all U.S. fans, I'm sure. But Alistair Johnson on the field as well for the Canadians. But what was your takeaway from the action last night?
I mean, first of all, it's just a special experience to be there and just to be in the market and see the fans turn up and make an incredible atmosphere. I thought the game had moments where it was incredibly electric, which was always fun. Not enough, frankly. I thought, you know, the game was a little bit frustrating, as you mentioned, but, you know, I do appreciate what the team is trying to do. Knowing a lot of guys on both sides of the ball there, it's interesting to see how each team is approaching this process in a cycle that's seen a lot of turnover, a lot of changes for each side. So it was always going to be a little bit of a feeling out period between the two for sure. You know, but this is what it's all about. The games are always going to be tight and the margin for error is super small. And I think that's what happened on the goal the U.S. conceded. And obviously we were able to be a little bit more dangerous and benefit from it and capitalize on it with the goal from Brendan Aaronson. So obviously we want to see a lot more goals in the back of the net as we start to get through this process. But a lot to play for still, obviously.
2 points from two games. A lot of people, you know, a little panicky, thinking, you know, we needed, and this makes Honduras must win this week. Where do you sit on all this, considering, you know, there's a lot of games to come?
Yeah, for sure. I think the pressure is something that's warranted. It's something that I know everybody within the program and U.S. soccer welcomes, and they ingrain into what they do every day, and that's how they go about their business, and they welcome it. It's something that they're aware of, I'm sure. It adds a little bit of an added element, and I think it's a little early, like you said, maybe to be looking at this Honduras game as a must win. But I think they go out and they try to win every single game. I think they're very process-oriented. And, of course, the results matter. It's what really counts at the end of the day. But they're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, when it comes to how they approach each of these games. And they've got a lot of great players. They've got a lot of great coaches. And, you know, they've got all the tools to be successful. And it's going to be very exciting once it really starts to click in a way that everyone can get consistently excited for and it starts to be reflected in the results. So, you know, I'm not saying there's a lot of progress that needs to be made. I think we're there. It's just about tightening the screws a little bit and finding ways to win games.
Let's turn the attention then back to Nashville SC. We heard the goal calls from Friday night. Another fantastic result, a great win against a rival team right up there with you in NYCFC, a team that was on a hot streak as well, been very strong. Particularly in their own home games this season. I mean, are you playing right now in just about the most confident team that you think you've played in Major League Soccer?
Oh, man, that's a tough question to say. I think, you know, my personal experience back in the, you know, 2016 year with Toronto, I thought we were incredibly confident. And that was sort of a strange year. We started the first 10 games on the road and sort of found out a lot about ourselves as the stadium was getting built. And we ended up hosting MLS Cup at the end, didn't win it. But that was a team that was extremely different in a lot of different ways from what this Nashville team represents and what we're about. All good ways, all different ways. But, you know, it's like you mentioned, it's just a great experience to be able to play at home against the team that's right next to you in the standings in the conference. And we call those 6-point games. It's a 6-point swing with the implications of what it does in the table. Being able to keep them behind us and continue to move forward is always an opportunity that we love. And I think, you know, we talk about it a lot this year and especially last year. That's one interesting caveat of the COVID schedule, if you want to call it that, and how traditionally you see a lot more out-of-conference teams and what those games mean in your schedule. But, you know, having so many Eastern Conference opponents this year makes every game that much more exciting and important.
and it's kind of setting up, you know, rivalries along the way, isn't it? And that's, I suppose, why I went with the word confident, because I didn't want to say you're playing necessarily with your best team yet, because you've been with a Toronto side that's gone, you know, almost all the way. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, the confidence in a group, because, you know, you're working, you do physical exercise out there on the field, you know, but sometimes the mental side is what's important. And the confidence you must have, particularly playing at home, it must be immense now within this group, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. You know, first and foremost, it's about looking around the locker room, being able to look guys in the eye before and during the game and after the game and know that everyone's on the same page. I think that's, for one reason or another, very hard to come by at any level in sport, let alone in professional sports. You got guys in different ages, phases of their career, you know, all this other stuff that accompanies the professional game is difficult. Whereas in college soccer, you're living with all these guys, they're your best friends, you have class, and that sort of gelling effect becomes natural. I think this is the most fun I've had playing in a very, very long time, maybe even since college. And it's a testament to the guys we have and the coaching staff and just the way the club goes about things. It brings the best out of, you know, everybody, I think. And so it's just a pleasure to be able to play at home against teams, like I said, that are close to you in the standings. And then just know that we have a very tough slate ahead of us. I think, like I said, I've experienced it in one dimension of playing all of your away games at the beginning of the season and how that can be valuable. But, you know, obviously we've had a ton of home games to open up this year. And I think that was very valuable in getting, first of all, getting fans back out there and playing an exciting brand of soccer. I think that really helps, and it's galvanized our group a lot. And to sort of be able to tighten that screw again, like I mentioned before, and starting to turn a lot of these home results into wins, it's just good for everybody. And it sort of emboldens us as we go away to these longer stretches on the road where results may become a little bit more difficult to come by. But I always think that the most important thing, like you mentioned before, is the confidence that you go into these places. And to have it coming off the back of a few good home results and being difficult to play against on the road, I think is huge.
You've shifted across from, you know, the ever-present position of left back or left wing back to playing right wing back. Take us backstage, if you like, into when Gary Smith first made that adjustment. And what it's been like to play on that side of the field and see a completely to see this same team, but from a very different position on the field.
Yeah, I think it's something. Well, initially Gary needed to, you know, be a little bit creative with how we're going to line up, given the absences and some injuries, and of course everyone's dealing with the health protocols the last year and a half. So we've been shuffling things around a little bit of musical chairs. It seems like at times, with all teams are dealing with it in some form or capacity. So he asked me if I'd be comfortable shifting over there. I told him I would definitely be, but you know, it's very interesting. I played a lot of my youth career on the right side. We played with inverted wingers, and I was predominantly a winger the majority of my youth career in college. So, it definitely came naturally to me. It's something that I thoroughly enjoy. It's always nice to get a different perspective on the game and to be able to come inside on my left foot, and try to find different connections from different angles with the guys I'm playing with. I think it's very exciting. But obviously it's been cool to get a few reps at it and start to, you know, finer tune parts of my game that maybe I haven't seen in a long time. So I've loved that. Honestly, it's been very exciting, very fun for me. But that's only a luxury I have because Taylor Washington does such an amazing job on the left. I think that is the key to it. I don't think Gary or the staff would feel any kind of confident moving guys around if they didn't feel like the people moving into these spots could get the job done. And I think it's just another special element of our group. We have a lot of guys that, you know, maybe other MLS teams may not have taken a chance on. And we just knew that these guys are going to get the job done and they're going to add a lot of value in all facets of the game and in the locker room. And so when you have guys like that step on, I mean, Matt LaGrasse also had a week off and he came in and helped us seal the game out at the end. And Brian Anunga was fantastic and is able to step in there and do his job incredibly well whenever he plays. And that's very hard to come by in sports, to have those guys mentally ready to play. And we have a whole lot of them here, which makes everyone else's job incredibly easy.
And what's the mindset for you when, you know, you talked there about, you know, the temptation and at times the right move will be to come inside on your left. But also, if you had to change the mindset as well, that sometimes you can almost kind of open those shoulders and you're heading off down the right, and, you know, and play on the weaker foot if you like. What's it been like for you to kind of, you know, play on that side of the field like that and those make those decisions?
I think it's great. Not to get too bogged down in the details, but I always think, you know, if you're a professional player, you should try to make sure you're proficient with each one of your feet. So you only have two, you don't have six or seven. So you could probably figure out a way to make one or both of them hopefully serviceable. So in the event that I do go down the line with my right, I can usually get the ball into a dangerous spot and not kick it out of bounds. And of course, I'm sure I'll kick it out of bounds the next time I do it, but
it's great.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. Honestly, I really enjoy it. I think the game is a game of opposites, and you go inside one time, the next time you got to go outside. And it's something I picked up as a winger. You got to mix your game up. You got to make the guy defending you respect both sides of your game and how you can attack them. So it's something we work on all the time. Steve Guppy, assistant coach, always talks to the wingers about it. And I'm always obviously listening as I'm doing my defensive work with Gary. So it holds true. It holds a lot of water. And it's something that I've, like I said, I'm really excited to get a lot of reps at and have some continuity at again and sort of reestablish, finer tune those areas in my game and help us score goals. But frankly, the guys up top don't need a lot of help at the moment. So it's given me a little bit of time to get acclimated and get back up to speed for sure.
Yeah, you talked about the guys up front scoring goals. I mean, CJ Sapong is someone that, you know, followers of this league have watched for years. Hany Mukhtar is somebody who's in year two. And I mean, this is his kind of breakout year, isn't it? I mean, what has it been like to watch the evolution, if you like, of Hany Mukhtar and to see some of the things he's producing for this team?
It's incredible, but, you know, internally, none of us really bat an eye because we spend time with him every day and we get to see what he's capable of. But I think the conundrum or sort of the most consistent difficulty with guys of that nature, not to lump him in with this general category, but he fits within it, is, you know, these big DP or highly paid players that come in from foreign markets and different leagues that have to try to adjust to MLS. It's so hard. And I think a lot of it depends on what type of guy you have, what kind of character you have. And to see a guy that came in last year amidst the most difficult year in the history of sports to start to get acclimated to a new setting and to have all this stuff go wrong and for it to be so strange, for him to be consistently working hard and putting his head down and not complaining and getting through the work, it's amazing, because a lot of guys have the talent and sort of let themselves get sidetracked by way less intense or significant factors like COVID or what last season represented. So for him to be able to come in this year and start fresh, start in shape, he was very fit coming in this year. We knew he was going to be a different animal, but someone we knew was going to be very valuable to us. So to see him firing on all cylinders is amazing. We thoroughly enjoy it, but it's not surprising to us. We know what he's capable of. And you know, just as you log more minutes with these guys, you start to figure out where they like the ball and where they're producing the most. And those little things add a little bit of an edge, and it's hard to quantify or really pick up on, but it's just little pieces of the game that he's making our lives incredibly easy from a defending standpoint. He works hard on that side of the ball as well. And we just have to try to make sure we find him in good spots and let him do what he has to do.
You're listening to Dan Lovitz, our special guest on NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. We're going to take a short break, and then after that, we're going to dive a little bit more into Dan's soccer upbringing, talk a little bit of Philly, a little bit of college, and also, of course, look ahead to the remaining games and this big month for Nashville SC in Major League Soccer. So we will see you on the other side of this break. And welcome back. Part three, NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. This is Tony Husband in the chair tonight and our special guest, Nashville SC defender Dan Lovitz. So, Dan, we're going to wind the clock back a little bit on your soccer career. Let's take it back to where you first started playing the sport. You're a Philly boy. Tell me about growing up playing soccer and a little bit as well about, ironically, in a week where the US are going to be playing Honduras, the kind of influence a certain Honduran coach had on your early soccer days.
Oh, yeah. That's good research right there. he's going to be delighted to hear that. So I think I had a pretty typical upbringing with soccer. Started playing when I was four. First organized sport, very exciting. And then soccer was always my first love, and I followed that into the travel soccer landscape. I was playing a year up in my township until I reconnected with an old friend, actually, when I was 10, who was playing for a more competitive club team that was at my age level, with this coach, Miguel Nuila, in, you know, downtown Philly. We were sourcing kids from all over the tri-state area at a very young age, and it was just a really exciting time to be part of soccer in a very talent-rich area. Jersey, New York, Philly. There were a lot of guys that were very good, even at a young age. But the most amazing part for me was that this is sort of hard to come by now with the academies developing, and they are amazing in their own right and capacity. But I was able to play with this team from when I was 10 until I was 21, with probably 75 to 80% of the same guys on the team. That's a really special experience to have, especially for me. I have no brothers or sisters. So I have like 17, 18 other brothers that I grew up with, basically seeing them three times a week for practice for 11 years is pretty amazing. And we were incredibly competitive. We were ranked nationally all the time. We won multiple state cups, regionals, all that stuff. And I think the most exciting part about it, and this, the what I'm most proud of, is that you know, the sport was really recruiting a lot of just enormous athletes to play soccer. And we had a coach that was incredibly progressive and creative in how he approached the game. And we had a lot of short technicians, a lot of diverse kids from all over the place, Japanese guys, African guys, Colombian guys. It was just a melting pot of all different, you know, approaches to the game and a lot of different talent sets. And we always felt like we were playing these, you know, robotic teams, and it was so fun to just dismantle them with these creative formations and a lot of guys that were so much higher on the technically gifted scale than other players we were playing against. So I'm very grateful for the way I was taught the game and the way I was able to go about it and just express myself and not get bogged down in tactics so much and just have fun every practice, which I was able to do. You know, we had a lot of guys go D1. I didn't think I was going to go D1. I got drafted what I felt like was on a whim. I got picked up by Elon University, that was D1 at the time. I was touring mostly D3 schools in upstate New York, honestly. So that came out of left field. I was very excited for that. Saw Duke, Wake Forest, UNC, Virginia Tech on our schedule. And those were powerhouse schools that, you know, I wanted to be able to test myself against. So it was an amazing experience. I was very lucky to play for Darren Powell and Chris Little at Elon University for 4 years. And, you know, it's cool. I'm proud of that as well. I don't think that is afforded to guys in the college game anymore. I did 4 years and was incredibly lucky to get my degree and then go take a stab at the professional game, which is, you know, things are obviously operating a little bit differently now, but it's cool to be able to have that experience under my belt, and I think it served me well as I progressed as a pro.
And you rolled right into your time at Elon University there, and actually we had a question from Leah Wynn about how you reflect on that college soccer experience, and clearly it you know, played a big part in your development. You would then go into Major League Soccer and play for both the Canadian clubs. Tell me a little bit about the kind of major influences on you, the kind of the key players perhaps who passed on some wisdom to you during your time with both Montreal and, of course, Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, I tell the young guys all the time, you know, and I tell people all the time, I've been incredibly lucky and blessed with being in the locker room and sharing the field with some of the best role models I could have possibly had. You know, the one that jumps out at me right away is Stephen Caldwell. He was the captain of Toronto FC when I showed up. And the locker room was great. We had a lot of great American guys that had kind of been around the league a little bit. Michael Bradley, that was his first year. Dwayne DiRosario came back. Jermaine Defoe was there. Julio Cesar was our goalie. And I was just this kid from Elon. I couldn't believe what was going on. And everything was, you know, very, very straightforward for me. And I was treated incredibly fairly, incredibly well. Ryan Nelson was the coach at the time. And I had originally been loaned to Wilmington Hammerheads, which is our affiliate in the USL. I was coming off knee surgery after my senior year in college. And I came back and he just told me, look, we're happy to have you. You're here because we need numbers, not, you know, because you've been lighting the field on fire for Wilmington. But look, if you do well, we'll keep you around. Otherwise, we'll send you back. And that was as clear as it needed to be. And so that really sort of set things out for me. And there was no reading between the lines, nothing. It was just explicit. And I think that was incredibly valuable to me. And guys like Stevie Caldwell were, you know, the guys that would put your arm around you and be there for you, but would also slap the water bottle out of your hand if you didn't defend in the small sided. So that happened a few times, and that kind of gives you a wake up call. So that was incredible. I was very, very lucky to share the field with those guys. And of course, Michael Bradley is the epitome of professionalism and a guy that, you know, I respect the absolute hell out of. So sharing the field with him is, you know, a very special experience. And I am incredibly lucky to have done it for such a long period of time there. And then Montreal was a little bit of a different animal. There was definitely a different culture on the team and how things were being done. And there was a lot of turnover with coaching staffs. I think that made it a little bit difficult at times, but I played with Nacho Piatti, who was maybe, in my opinion, one of the most underrated players in MLS history. And this guy was the most humble, most loving, caring guy of all time. And he couldn't speak English, but he, you know, had a way of letting guys know that he cared about them, and he would work hard on the field for them. It's very rare to see guys that talented work their butts off the way he did. And that made a major impression on me. And just to have so many guys from all over the world that have played in big Italian Classicos and played in the Premier League, played all over the place. Bakary Sagna shows up. He's our right back playing across the side for me. I couldn't believe it. And he's one of the best guys I ever met in my life. I'm sure anyone that's met him would say the same, but it's just an incredible experience, honestly. And I get to come here, and then I'm stuck with guys like Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy, and they're just horrible to be around all the time.
I mean, are you passing on now? You know, you talked about that there. There you are, a young guy, and Stephen Caldwell's there, you know, bashing the water bottle out of your hand if you're not doing the job right. I mean, yeah. Have you passed on, you know, some of that as you look around a roster now that has a Jack Mayer, has an Alistair Johnston, has, you know, young players finding their way? You know, has the role flipped for you now? Do you provide that kind of mentoring?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it's weird for me to think of myself as a mentor, but I think I've had such valuable experiences, and I have my own style of doing things. There are things I really like about the guys I had, you know, exposure to at a leadership level, and there's stuff that I really didn't like. So I just try to, you know, take on board what I really want to progress and I think should continue to live on in locker rooms and live on in cultures of successful teams and, you know, make it my own a little bit. So again, it's incredibly, I have the luxury here of being able to pick and choose my moments to talk to guys and be a positive influence or, you know, be a, you know, somebody that's more demanding at times for sure. And that's, you know, just the right that I'm afforded because I have guys like Dax and Godoy and Joe Willis that have been in the league and are just stand up guys and make everything so easy. And there's no friction in where the team's going and what people's motivations are. And it's a really, really delightful experience. Like I said before, it's so hard to come by in professional sports. It's a pleasure. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, we got some quick fire questions before we head to the break and we let you go. So these are some questions that have come in through the day. And actually, you mentioned a certain Dax McCarty. There's a certain Jen McCarty who has asked us this question. Is it true you cut your teammate's hair?
I do.
And who are there any particular regular customers?
I don't know if I should out them, but I'll keep my clientele list.
You'll
hide it because they pay me handsomely and I don't want the price to shoot down if there's more people involved. So
but you're handy with a pair of clippers then, basically.
I'm handy with this is one of the skills I took up during the pandemic last year. The guitar didn't stick, but the clippers found a way to stay in my repertoire.
All right. Well, I'm Jen McCarty asking, I noticed Dax has had a pretty ferocious cut at the back there, you know, looks like a grade one, so whether that was you or not, we will have to guess and wonder. Dominic Rush says, are you ready for the new stadium next season? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I couldn't be more ready. I'm chomping at the bit. I think everyone is. It's incredible just to see, you know, we get glimpses of the progress that's being made and, you know, knowing the area and how accessible it's going to be. And it's going to be one of the best places in the league to play, hands down. It's going to be a no-brainer. And just being able to, you know, make the atmosphere a little bit more intimate and sort of amplify all the stuff we have going on at Nissan and all that energy and all the noise. I think most importantly, we love it that it's going to be our home. But more importantly, the fans are going to have somewhere that they can really identify with. And we're going to make it a very special and very difficult place to play.
CG Vesta says, what's your favorite part about living in Nashville?
Oh, living in Nashville. There's a million things. The food, the weather. I like how close everything is together. It seems like you can get in the car 10 minutes downtown. You can be anywhere. You can be 12 South. You can be in the Nations. You can be in East Nashville. That's amazing. It's an incredibly dog friendly city. I have a dog this year. So that's been amazing, a nice sort of routine to get into after training and on days off. It's a very dog friendly city, which is always great. But in general, the people are amazing. I love the South. I went to school in Elon, which is still considered the South, even in North Carolina. So people are incredibly nice and welcoming, and it's just a pleasant place to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would second that. We're going to let you go, but obviously not before we just have a final word about the upcoming schedule. Four games away now, two of them in Canada, two against former clubs. What are your hopes and expectations as you go into, obviously this is a different run now, different phase of the season. Things are going to be tight and difficult, but you go into them in a great frame of mind, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think you can ask for much more, honestly, in terms of confidence, like we spoke of earlier. We're playing against, you know, two Canadian clubs that are, you know, experiencing a lot of changes, a lot of turnover, a lot of new direction within the last few years, and, you know, some more recently than others. And I think more importantly than anything, it's just about staying focused on ourselves, being invested in the process that we have. You know, I think we can approach every game like we're going to win it. We obviously are realistic, and we know that home games are a little bit easier to manage than away games. But I think it's a great timing for us to be able to be exposed to this sort of slate of away games and not have as many home games, because you come to value them. They become more exciting towards the end of the season when, you know, we want to be racing for the supporter shield. We want to be at the top of the Eastern Conference, and we're better to do that than, you know, a few selected home games at the end. So we embrace the grind. We know what this is going to be like. We have a great team to get it done. And the guys are super excited for it. It's going to be a new look, and it'll be a very telling and important part of our season.
Dan, been super chatting to you. Thank you for giving up your time to talk to us tonight on NSC Backstage.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No problem. There we go. Dan Lovitz, Nashville SC defender. And after this break, we will check in on the Canadian view with Luke Wildman. Final part of the show, Tony Husband with you tonight, NSC Backstage, presented by Camarena Tequila. Big soccer week, of course, we've just had, and it was a big Sunday night in Music City. A 1-1 draw between the United States and Canada. Let's get the Canadian perspective and look ahead to the Boys in Gold's next two road trips as well in Major League Soccer by talking to the voice of MLS north of the border, and indeed, of course, TSN's Canada commentator Luke Wildman. Luke, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you.
Nice to have you. So takeaways from last night. I mean, there's been a lot of comments on this side of the border, I would say, today about the kind of defensive block that John Herdman's Canada side went into last night. But I would imagine that the point at Nissan Stadium has been very well received in Canada today.
Absolutely. And I think when you consider what has happened in the past in terms of the rivalry being a little one-sided when the United States have played Canada, over the last couple of years, the games have been competitive on the whole. The Gold Cup was a 1-0 loss for Canada. Canada beat the U.S. for the first time since 1985 at BMO Field in the Nations League back just before the pandemic began. So that gap has been closing. And I think the way that John Herdman actually planned things out last night and went into the game with the changes in personnel and the depth on the bench, being able to rest the likes of Buchanan and also Jonathan David and then bring them on late into the game, I think Canada were left feeling in the end that the opportunities had been there despite the fact they were heavily outpossessed. To maybe have even got 3 points and come away and won that game last night. So maybe a little disappointed that after the first two games of this qualifying period, 1-1 draw at home against Honduras, followed by a draw against the US, they only have the 2 points. But there's a lot of excitement here for what is expected to be a golden generation with the likes of Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David. And I just think that John Herdman went into that game with a specific mindset in terms of how he wanted to play to get a result and also to manage his squad over the course of these three games, especially with a game coming up at home to El Salvador on Wednesday. He knows the importance of these home games at BMO Field, being able to take points from those games. So to come away from the U.S. with a point in Nashville was a really good result. But I think a little disappointed in the U.S. and the fact that they really weren't able to create enough in terms of danger going forward to trouble Canada a little bit more.
Yeah, I sense watching the U.S. and having watched the game in El Salvador last week, at the moment that it's coming down to just a hesitancy in their side. And when the decision is when the ball should go forward, it's going sideways. When it should go sideways, it's going backwards. They just look a little disjointed. And again, like you just say there with the Canadians, a kind of golden generation. This is a big U.S. group coming through. And you just sense at times those kind of expectations are weighing them on them a little, and they don't look the most cohesive side out there. And I mean, what was your take as you called the game? I mean, you talked a little bit about perhaps actually Canada could have taken this, and I felt that actually coming away from the game. You know, just somebody makes a gamble, gets into that 6-yard box. There's two very inviting balls that were played right across the face of goal that if somebody gets on the end of, Canada are probably walking away with 3 points.
Yeah, and we saw it a little bit differently in terms of the way that Herdman lined up the team, with Alphonso Davies playing a little bit further forward than he has done in the past. And that's the dilemma of how do you get the best out of one of the world's best left backs, for Bayern Munich, of course, a Champions League winner. But for Canada, they want him also to be creating and going forward and trying to make things happen at that end of the pitch. And it was a wonderful move for the goal that Canada scored to be able to get back into that. And Kyle Larin of Besiktas is in great form, scored 12 goals already this calendar year, all but one of the World Cup qualifying games. And Canada have been going for a while, of course. They've had, right since March, for the first two phases of qualifying before getting to this stage, for the first time since late 90s, qualifying for the France 98 World Cup. They've never been in this final stage of qualifying. So I don't think... certainly the pressure isn't on Canada in terms of those expectations of getting to the World Cup like it is on the United States. And you know, we talked on the broadcast last night about the fact that the pressure is more on Greg Berhalter's team because they didn't make it last time as well, that one or two missteps early on in this campaign is really going to, you know, they're going to start feeling it on their shoulders. Whereas I think, yes, Canada are in a position now where they have the players that people expect to be able to perform, and you know, you take away US and Mexico and they should be round about fighting for that third or fourth place in this group, judging by, you know, who Canada has available. But they're still, you know, this is the first time that all of those players on the pitch had ever been in a final round of World Cup qualifying game against the United States. So they're learning as they go on. And, you know, we saw that a little bit the first 45 minutes against Honduras at BMO Field, that this isn't Aruba or Suriname anymore. This is, you know, the real deal. Took them a little while to get into that, but I think everyone's proud of the performance they put in. And a lot of people unhappy with the comments made by Brendan Aaronson after the game last night about the fact that, you know, Canada didn't come to play. Canada came just to defend. And, you know, one is, if that was the way they played, then they're allowed to do that. Whatever they think is the best way to get the points, find a way to break them down. But I also think it's a little harsh on how they actually did approach the game. And the transition is so important for Canada, with the pace of Buchanan, the New England Revs player who's had a great season, and Alphonso Davies and the abilities that they've got. So I think it was a game plan that worked to perfection. Could have backfired on John Herdman. And that's the other thing about the US. They didn't test, I think, enough a back line that had just been put together for this game. Daniil Henry, Scott Kennedy at the back, and Sam Adekubi, who hasn't played a big game for a while for Canada. You know, they changed three big pieces at the back there last night, and they just weren't tested enough, I think.
And a back line that it now seems Alistair Johnston has become a kind of lock for this team, which just shows his continuing progress. Let's flip it to MLS then. So Nashville go to Montreal this weekend. Two quite interesting games they've had with Montreal this year. Coming back from 2-0 down in April, in the kind of crazy early weeks of the season. And then they needed a 94th-minute equaliser to deny Wilfred Nancy's side from a really what looked like there was going to be a very good win for them in June. Meeting number three then, what are you expecting in Montreal this weekend?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting from the perspective of the fact that Montreal right now are on a little bit of a roll, certainly at home, and they've got some decent results on the road as well. So Wilfred Nancy's side has a little bit of confidence. They're without Mason Toy, who has been very impactful for them going forward this season. But they also now have just got Ramel Kyoto back just before the international break. He'd been out injured for a little while with a hamstring issue, came back. I was there in Montreal just before the break when they played Toronto FC. We were calling that game. Montreal with a 3-1 win. Kyoto came in off the bench, scored a goal, hit the ground running. Can be a real difference maker for them between now and the end of the season. Although he's been away on international break, and you always wonder with these players, you know, it's an awful lot for these players to have 3 World Cup qualifying games and then come back straight into a weekend game. So we'll wait and see how those players coming back adjust. And by the way, you mentioned Alistair Johnston. For any Nashville fans who didn't get the chance, and I'm sure that the majority didn't get the chance to see Canada's home game against Honduras, he was the man of the match. He was absolutely outstanding at BMO Field in that position on the right side of that back three that John Herdman likes, but also pushing forward a little bit as well. He was brilliant. He really was. Incredible to see him playing on that stage just 2 years ago in a semi-pro league in not too far from BMO Field playing games, and now where he is. But for Montreal, that game against Toronto, Stade Saputo is a really unique atmosphere. When they get going at home, and since coming back north of the border in mid-July, they haven't lost a home game there, and they've had some real cracking games as well. 5-4 win against Cincinnati, a 3-2 win against the Red Bulls, where they had a 3 times taken penalty in stoppage time to be able to win that one, with 3 different penalty takers and 2 VARs pulling the penalty back when it was missed. So, you know, crazy things can happen. But with Montreal in a playoff position and with a lot of home games coming up between now and the end of the season, it's been a great job Wilfred Nancy's done there, having just been given this job when Thierry Henry walked out on the eve of preseason. And he's getting the best out of some players now, like Victor Wanyama, wonderful career and resume. He's had a much better season this year than last. Samuel Piet is playing a little bit further forward now as well. He's a player who is the heartbeat of that team, scored a goal against Toronto FC because he's getting into more advanced positions. They've got players who can make things happen, like Joaquin Torres, who is really tricky with the ball at his feet and will have a run at the defense. And then Georgi Mihailovic, the US player who they push the boat out. A lot of money spent on him, $1 million potentially in allocation money to get him in. And he has certainly delivered with the goals and assists that he scored this season.
And in our final 20 seconds, they'll then Nashville go to Toronto. Have Toronto given up on this season?
What a mess.
You only need 10 seconds for this bit, don't you?
Yeah. yes, they have. They say the right things, but really there's absolutely no chance of a playoff place. They still have a Canadian championship to play for. They have a game against the Canadian Premier League side on the 22nd, which is just following that Nashville game. That's what they'll go all in on now. They have to try and get something to redeem what has been a horrendous season.
Mm. All right, interesting. Contrasting fortunes north of the border. Luke, thanks as always for joining us. Luke Warman there from TSN in Canada. And that brings us to the end of our hour. NSC Backstage, back with you again next week. But from Tony Husband and the rest of the team, and from Max behind the glass, we'll see you soon.